and welcome to the EU and You. I'm Ellen Gunning, and in this series, I hope to explain the EU and its most important institutions. This week, I wanted to have a chat with our European Commissioner. First, though, I asked David O'Grady to tell me something about the Commission and Maura Geoghegan-Quinn.
The European Commission is made up of different departments called Directorates General, or DGs. These DGs cover agriculture and rural development, climate action, competition, economic and financial affairs, education and culture, employment, social affairs and equal opportunities, energy, enterprise and industry, environment, executive agencies, home affairs, maritime affairs and fisheries, mobility and transport, health and consumers, information society and media, internal market and services, justice, regional policy, research, taxation and customs unions. They are also responsible for external relations, trade issues, humanitarian aid, communications, budgets and all manner of internal services. There are 27 commissioners, one for each country. Ireland's commissioner is Maura Geoghegan-Quinn. A native of Galway, Maura Geoghegan-Quinn was first elected to Dáil Éireann in 1975. 2 years later, she was appointed Minister of State for Commerce. In 1979, she became the first woman cabinet minister since the foundation of the state when she was appointed Minister for the Gaeltacht. During her time in Irish politics, she also served as Minister of State for Education, Minister for Tourism, Transport and Communications, Minister for Justice and Minister for European Affairs. During Ireland's presidency of the EU in 1990, she chaired the Budget, Telecommunications, Culture and Development Councils. She was a member of the European Court of Auditors from 2000 until 2010, when she was appointed European Commissioner for Research, Innovation and Science.
I'm joined on the line by Ireland's Commissioner Maura Geoghegan-Quinn. Thanks for taking my call, Commissioner.
Thank you, Ellen.
Now, let me begin with the speed of your appointment, which seemed to be quite incredible. In November of last year, Taoiseach Brian Cowan announced that he had appointed you Ireland's new Commissioner. And 12 days later, President José Manuel Barroso appointed you as Commissioner-Designate for Research, Innovation and Science. Now, I presume in the first instance he had to try and satisfy himself that you had an interest in that area. Were you always interested in that area?
Well, he did have to satisfy himself. I had a chat with him, when I came back from the States after Brian Cowan had spoken to me and offered me the job. And sort of was a general chat, you know, about what you're interested in, what you'd like to do and so on. And then a second chat where he actually told me, he didn't give me a choice, even though some people thought I did get a choice. I didn't. He said this was the area he wanted done, and the reason he wanted me in it was because he felt I had the energy and the drive to push it through. So I've always, I suppose, Ellen, been interested in those issues. I was Minister for State, as you remember, in Industry, Commerce and Energy, and then I was Minister of State and Education for a while, and then I was in Transport and Communications, and I suppose there are elements of all of those in my current job. But of course, I always say, you know, that you don't have to be a doctor or a nurse to be Minister for Health or a solicitor to be a Justice Minister. So I don't think that you need to be a scientist to be the Research and Innovation Commissioner.
No, that's why I was wondering, had you an interest in the area? Because I'm inclined to agree with you. I think the interest and the energy and the drive would cover a huge area. The portfolio itself, though, is an enormous portfolio. It's very hard to get a handle on. I know that after he had appointed you, I love the idea that he didn't actually give you an option, by the way, that he spoke generally about what would you like and then came back and said, I have decided. But I suppose that's in the nature of all bosses. But in January then, once you were, you went before the European Parliament, it was their job to accept the Commission and you as the Commissioner with that particular portfolio. Now, I know you spent 3 hours answering, I think it was a total of 64 questions. Mm-hmm. It's a huge amount of homework to get a handle on. I'm just wondering how you prepped for it, because the brief is very big and every member asking a question is coming from a particular perspective. So how do you get a handle on all of that in such a short space of time?
It's a terrifying ordeal, if I can say it that. It's like, it would be like me going back at almost 60 years of age and attempting the Leaving Cert now. So it was a grueling 3 hours, and dealing with, as you rightly said just a minute ago, all of these MEPs specialise in a particular aspect of the portfolio and they know everything about it. So I was supposed to be able to answer all of these detailed questions from all of the MEPs sufficiently to give the impression that I knew and could demonstrate that I could exercise my job properly. And I think also, I think maybe it's a good thing. I think that the hearings are a great example of European democracy in action. So how did I prepare? I burned the midnight oil. I was here in Brussels. We all got, as commissioners designate, we got temporary offices. The Directorate General for Research staff came in and briefed me on all of the aspects of the job. I had my own small team helping me, and I got 4 days off for Christmas. The rest of the time, I mean, I just prepared rigorously, and thankfully it paid off at the end of the day.
Well, you certainly seem, just from watching snippets of the interviews, you certainly seem to have really got your head around what on paper at least looks like an almost impossible brief. Because if you're thinking of science, technology and innovation, it crosses into absolutely every area you can think of. It's not as if it's one small area that you, I don't mean small, but it's not as if it's one area that you can box off. You actually have a finger in the pie of everything that's happening in Europe.
Exactly. You do indeed.
One of the things that caught my eye was patents. Don't ask me why. It just seemed a simple thing and a sort of a simple thing to understand as well, I suppose. If somebody's applying for a patent, to register a patent in the EU, they need to register it in 27 different countries. And in the USA, they register it only once. I presume it's roughly 20 times cheaper and 20 times easier. It's that kind of thing that you're looking at in the area of innovation, where people have actually come up with ideas to try and make it a little bit easier for them within Europe as a whole to progress that idea, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's. I suppose it isn't really fair in a way to say that you always have to register a patent in every 27 country, in all the 27 countries, because we do have a European Patent Office. But the current process is exactly as you said. It's expensive, 20 times more so than in the US, for example. It's onerous. It's also very unsatisfactory. And even though commissioners up to now have done a lot, including Charlie McCreevy, to push it over the line, nobody has managed to be able to do that. Now, I think that now, because we're looking at the Research and Innovation Union and what needs to be done, there's a realisation now that we have to have procedures and translation requirements that are simple. And certainly Michel Barnier, together with myself and Barroso, President Barroso, are working very hard to improve things. And I'm hopeful that they will get the support of the member states, and that in the autumn, when I bring forward my action plan, that Commissioner Barnier will also very shortly thereafter be able to bring forward a plan to deal specifically with the patent issue.
And your action plan that you're bringing forward in the autumn, and again, I mean, people talk about Europe moving slowly, but that's a very short space of time to put together an action plan, is for the next 5 years or so going forward and what you hope to achieve?
Yes, I mean, the action plan is going to be it's going to look at innovation in a broad sense. I mean, business innovation, design, social innovation, for example. And what we mean by social innovation is, you know, use of ICT to help older people to live longer and healthier lives in their own homes and so on. But it's going to look at everything, taking basic research all the way through to commercialization. And we're not good, Ellen, at doing that here in Europe. They're very good at doing it in America. We haven't been good at doing it here. And I think there are a number of things that we need to do, like on standards, like on regulations, like on providing innovative finance funding for small companies, like venture capital, as they refer to it. So there's a whole lot of issues that need to be tackled head on to be able to clear these barriers out of the way, so we can have a whole chain all the way from the basic research, as I said, to the commercialization of products.
It makes a huge amount of sense, because just following that USA analogy for a minute, they do all speak the same language, but they are all part of one country, and we're 27 different countries, so with different languages. So it must be difficult to pull that all together and behave almost as if you were a USA in terms of progressing product. If you're looking from sort of basic research through, is there also an issue that there's a lot of basic research that's actually being repeated across different countries? Is that possible?
Well, when I was preparing for that grueling before the Parliament, I discovered, for example, that there were over 70 different research, pieces of research being done over throughout the 27 member states that were dealing with the one Salmonella bacteria. Now, that cannot be allowed to continue. And I said that at the time, and I think there's a realization that we cannot allow that to continue. So we have a single market for goods in the EU. We've moved a long way towards a single market for services. And, you know, we now need to look at how we do European research area. And completing the European research area is about, stopping the duplication of research that is done in all of the different member states.
Well, that also frees up more budget and more time. If you've 70 different individual projects looking at the same issue, that's 68 possibly that could be doing something that was more worthwhile. Not more worthwhile, but that was in a different area that would benefit others. With this European research area, the whole idea is that Europe is treated as one area for research, and that areas of research would continue to be identified in the same way, but that somehow the different universities would agree among themselves who would conduct the research. Is that the idea?
That's right. Well, what you have at the moment is you have too many obstacles that are holding back the kind of cross-border research and innovation that should be going on, or you have bottlenecks or barriers or whatever you want to call them that hamper the construction of this true European research area as we refer to it. And the patents issue that we discussed a minute ago is one of those. But the difficulties also that researchers have, for example, in transferring their pension rights when they go to work in member states, because you have to remember that researchers get contracts in a member state that maybe last a year or 2 years, and then they have to go and look for another contract somewhere else. It could well be in another member state and they need to move. But the difficulty is that they don't have the kind of support, flexi-security as we call it, or pension right support that they can take with them. So we're working on that. I would like to see that we would address all of those things in the Innovation Union Action Plan. Of course, like everything else, Ellen, there won't be any overnight miracles, but I'm confident that we can make progress. And I think that member states realise that, you know, these are issues that all of us need to tackle and need to tackle together.
And the other thing you mentioned, I wouldn't have been conscious that there was such a barrier to movement of people, if you like, who were in the research area. But the other thing you mentioned was that moving from basic research to the commercial realisation of a product, that Europe isn't very good at doing that either.
No, we haven't been very good at doing that. I think you see that there is a culture which is afraid of risk taking, which is afraid of losing and not getting on. But research is all about, you know, trying things out, not being successful, maybe doing 10 or 12 things before you find one particular idea that actually is successful. America is much better at doing that because they have that culture already. And I think we need to change the culture that we have here to move more towards accepting risk, accepting failure on the basis that every time you fail, you learn something new from it. So I think that that's an area that we need to look at very carefully and see how we can do it better than what we're doing it now.
It would certainly open an awful lot of doors, because I thought of it as an Irish thing rather than a European thing. But that difference in attitude, that if you fail in bringing something to a commercial realisation in Ireland, people say, oh my God, you know, you failed. And in America, they say, well, good on you, try again.
Exactly, exactly. That's in essence the difference between the two. And what we need to do is, I think we need to look at how we can change that and how we can, not encourage failure, but how we can learn from people who are entrepreneurs and creators, and how they can fail several times before they finally come up with that silver bullet that, you know, resolves some major grand societal challenge or whatever that needs to be looked at, and where we can have breakthroughs in very key areas.
No, it's encouraging that risk culture that you were talking about. You mentioned earlier things like social innovation. Give me some ideas about how your area is likely to impact in the area of social innovation.
Well, social innovation is something that's, I suppose, means different things to different people. But basically what we're looking at is, if you look at the member states at the moment, they're all under economic pressure. Budgets are very limited. Every finance minister is cutting back right across the board, particularly in health, particularly in social welfare. So we're looking at, what can Europe do? What added value can Europe bring? Because I think Europe shouldn't be in the business of repeating what member states are doing, but we should look at what added value we can bring. And on the social innovation, for example, if we can help older people to live longer, healthier lives in their own home by using innovative products like information technology, gadgetry, self-medication things, and all of that area. If we can do that, can you imagine that would allow people to live at home very healthily and be cared for at home. Can you imagine the burden that would lift off the shoulders of member states? So I think they're the areas that we need to look at.
To lift the burden off member states, but the burden of family members who would
exactly.
be happier to see older people living in their own homes and older people themselves feeling more empowered.
Exactly. Well, I mean, for anybody just like myself who has gone through a situation of having a parent who could no longer be cared for at home and had to be cared for in a nursing home, first of all, the cost of it. Secondly, the fact that you feel guilty all of the time because you can't look after that person at home, but you don't have the facility. So if we can provide the research that provides at the end of the day the kind of innovative products that member states can buy, that they can use, that ordinary citizens can use to help older people live longer, healthier lives in their own homes, I think that would be a huge breakthrough and something very worthwhile.
That would be super, and it was something people would really applaud Europe on as well.
Exactly.
Another one of the areas that you're likely to touch into, because really you touch into all sorts of areas, is energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I presume you're trying not to repeat the work that's already been done, but to move it to a different level?
Yes, we are. I mean, energy, we're focusing, the Europe 2020 strategy is all about looking at the grand societal challenges as they're talked about. But for the ordinary man or woman in the street, what is a grand societal challenge? Well, you know, healthy aging is one, food security, energy security. And energy really is one of the areas where science has managed and has helped to change hearts and minds. And without huge research, we wouldn't know that there's a threat from climate change. It's researchers who alerted the world, and it's researchers, many of them within, in fact, EU-funded projects, who are developing this energy-efficient technology to help tackle the issue. So what I've started to do since February is to refocus the research efforts on precisely the kind of major challenges and on others like health and food security. And I suppose at the end of the day, Ellen, research is about finding solutions to the problems of tomorrow, today. And innovation is about making sure that those solutions that we find can be implemented and that Europe, most particularly the individual member states, get the kind of economic benefit that they need from that.
It's something that we probably don't think of on a European scale, that food security issue, which actually one of the MEPs, I think it was Mairead McGuinness, raised in an earlier programme, or energy security, that
yes.
as a body within Europe, we mm-hmm. need to actually be sure that we have a constant and sustainable supply of energy or food. It's a very tall order for 27 countries that are likely to continue increasing into the future.
It is. Well, you know, one of the things that I did not so long ago here in Brussels is I went out to look at and be shown the latest electric battery car. And one of the things which I felt at the time was, for example, let's say Dublin, the Lord Mayor of Dublin and the authorities decided that Dublin is going to have only electric buses. And I don't know how many buses there are in Dublin, a couple of thousand. And the Lord Mayor and his team were to go to one of the major manufacturers, and I'm not going to mention any, mm-hmm. and say we want 3,000 or 4,000 buses for Dublin. Now, they get one price for that. But can you imagine if you had the capital city or any city in each of the 27 member states to pool together and all go to that same manufacturer? Can you imagine the kind of discount that they would get for the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of buses that they would want to buy?
Now, it's a much smarter option.
Exactly. And that's public procurement. And when people talk about public procurement, very often the ordinary man or woman in the street will say, well, what's that all about? Well, it's about the purchasing power that the public purse has. So public authorities buying equipment, whatever it might be, in this case, as I said, electric buses, for providing a service to the public. And I don't think that in Europe we use the power of public procurement that we have as efficiently or as effectively as we could. And that's something that I would like to see changing.
It's something, I suppose, that we're coming to quite slowly in Ireland. Even the idea that the government, through this e-tenders, would seek to open up a tender opportunity to everybody, and the reluctance of certain businesses, I suppose, to see business going outside of Ireland. Like a kind of focus on buy Ireland as opposed to buy Europe. If you move that to another level and say, well, look, really, if this government or this Dublin City Corporation joined with Galway and Amsterdam and Milan and everywhere else.
Exactly.
You're not only have you got huge savings, but you're actually making a very positive statement about where you believe the future of Europe or energy use is actually going.
Exactly. And it gives you that power, that a member state, as you rightly said, has that power already. But actually working together as 27 member states together, they can make enormous savings. First of all, they can help the environment by buying something that's energy efficient. They can cut CO2 emissions. So it not alone does it help the public purse, but it also helps the environment in which we live. And it makes life an awful lot better for the ordinary men and women in society.
You're talking about a very grand vision, though, a vision that's it's much longer than a 5-year plan that
yes,
you're looking at for November. It really is looking sort of broadly at where are we going to be in 20, 30, 40 years time. Is there an outline of where Europe hopes to go that your plan hopes to fit within? Or is it 5 years by 5 years it builds on itself?
Well, I think what we need to do is my job is to set out the architecture of what the Innovation Union should be about. And that will then grow into my colleagues around the table doing the particular and specific blocks of work that need to be done, whether it's in flexi security, whether it's in working conditions, whether it's in the patents, research infrastructures, regardless of where digital agenda and so on, regardless of where it is, we have this group of commissioners that I chair. We're setting down what the architecture has to be. Then we're pushing, and the very important thing about the Innovation Union, I think, is first of all, will be the actual document itself and the proposal, but then starting to implement it, removing the bottlenecks and the barriers that I talked about. I think we have an unprecedented opportunity with research and innovation being now put by President Barroso at the centre or at the top, whatever you want to call it, of political priorities in Europe. And then in turn, President Van Rompuy, who's the permanent president of the Council of Ministers, also saying that this is what he wants at the central or at the top of the political priority in Europe. So we've an opportunity. It will be published by the end of September. It will then be discussed by the heads of state and government in December, and then we have to go about implementing it.
And I presume in order to overcome all of these barriers that will naturally arrive, some you will see and some you won't see coming at all, I presume you'll have to build in steps where, I don't know, at 6-monthly or yearly or whatever intervals, you try and figure out have you got as far as you've gone. And you've a huge coordination job after actually putting the plan together. You've actually got to coordinate with every other commissioner to make sure that they're implementing their part of your plan.
Absolutely. And we have at the moment what we call an innovation scoreboard. And I think we've a great opportunity to reinvigorate the scoreboard and make it even more meaningful than it is now, so that every year, once a year, we give the result of what the scoreboard says to all of the member states. We also have to monitor very tightly what's going on and work with the member states to ensure that all of what we are putting down is being implemented. Working with my colleague commissioners is also very, very important. And giving a report to the Competitiveness Council, which is where the research and industry ministers come together probably about 3 times every 6 months in each different presidency to look at how Europe is dealing and bearing up against all of the pressures that are there at the moment. And then I think that perhaps it's one of the things we're thinking about, but we haven't made a final decision, that once a year we should have something like an innovation summit where it wouldn't be just the politicians, it wouldn't just be the member state representatives, but it would also be representative of business, big business, small and medium-sized enterprises, everybody, all the stakeholders, as it were, coming together in one place and sort of taking stock of how much of the Innovation Union has been implemented during the year. Not naming and shaming, but sort of pointing up the good examples of where things have worked really well.
it's a superb idea because it also brings all of your stakeholders up to speed with what's been happening. And presumably it would give them an opportunity to offer you feedback as well and say, well, if you're looking at this area, don't forget there is an associated area that you should also concentrate on. It's a super idea, I hope.
Exactly.
And I love the idea of the Innovation Scoreboard, I have to tell you. I think that's a great idea. Tell me something. Your term is for 5 years. How will you gauge success at the end of it? What will give you that high five moment that you think, God, yeah, that was worth investing 5 years, because you must be investing 24/7 for the 5 years. What will be the high five moment?
Well, I'm not sure, Ellen, that they actually do high fives here in Brussels, by the way.
Listen, you can teach
maybe
them.
Maybe we could try it. Exactly. Maybe we could try it. But it's a long haul, you know. There's no overnight miracle in any kind of politics, as we know, not least in European politics, with so many different interests to reconcile. But I think that there is an unprecedented opportunity now, because research and innovation is right at the top of that list of political priorities. And I'd be happy, I think, at the end, if at the end of my mandate, I've been seen to have helped in a significant way to take that opportunity by doing three things. First of all, delivering the Innovation Union Action Plan and starting to implement it to remove some of those barriers and bottlenecks that we talked about earlier. Secondly, contributing to raising the overall level of investment in R&D in Europe to near the target of 3% of GDP that we have set. And I suppose last but not least, raising the public profile of research and innovation by communicating better what we're doing. Because it was one of the things that struck me when I was doing the preparation for the Parliament hearing, for example, was that we are doing an enormous amount of good work in the Directorate General of Research, but we don't talk about it because scientists and researchers are not great at communicating. They want to be in the laboratory, they want to be working, they want to be doing their experiments and so on. They feel really that communication is for somebody else and not for them. So I want to communicate all the good things that they're doing.
Well, now, if you achieve those three, you can certainly teach the other 26 how to high five. There's no doubt about that. Commissioner Maura Gaegenquid, I am delighted that José Manuel Barroso didn't give you the option, because he obviously chose exactly the right woman for the job. I'm thrilled that Van Rompuy has put it at the top of his agenda. And I really wish you the very best of success for the next 5 years. Thank you for taking the time out today.
Thank you very much indeed, Ellen.
You've been listening to 103.2 Dublin City FM. This series was presented and produced by Ellen Gunning. Sound engineering was by David O'Grady. The series was made with the assistance of the Department of Foreign Affairs Communicating Europe Initiative.